Welcome to the Deep Dive. You know we love to go deep, and today we're diving into the world of organic chemistry.
Specifically, families of carbon compounds.
Right. Our listeners sent us a really interesting chapter from an organic chemistry textbook.
And it's dense.
It is. So right. We're going to break it down for everyone.
Yeah, give everyone a solid understanding of the different types of carbon compounds out there.
Their properties and how scientists actually identify them.
Exactly.
Perfect. So the chapter starts off with, well, it starts at the very beginning.
With hydrocarbons.
Right, hydrocarbons. The simplest ones, right? Just made up of...
Carbon and hydrogen.
Carbon and hydrogen, that's it.
Yep.
Now, they seem pretty basic, but I have a feeling there's more to them than meets the eye.
Oh, absolutely. Hydrocarbons are like, they're foundational to organic chemistry.
Okay.
They're the backbone, you know? Everything else builds upon these.
So they're like the essential building blocks.
Exactly.
I like that. And the chapter mentions a few different types of hydrocarbons. We've got alkanes, alkenes, alkan.
And aromatic compounds.
Aromatic compounds. Okay. So it's like a whole family tree.
It is. And what distinguishes them are the types of bonds between the carbon atoms.
Oh. Okay.
So for example, alkanes.
Alkanes.
Only have single bonds between their carbons.
Got it.
Alkanes have at least one double bond.
Okay.
And alkanes have at least one triple bond.
So it's all about the bonds. The type of bond really changes the game.
It does. It changes how they behave, how they react.
Fascinating. What about these aromatic compounds, though? They sound kind of, I don't know, mysterious.
They are interesting. So the most famous one is benzene.
Benzene. Okay.
And we often draw it with alternating single and double bonds in a ring.
Okay.
But here's the thing. All those carbon bonds are actually the same length.
Wait a minute. Hold on. How is that possible?
Right. You would think if there are single and double bonds, they should be different lengths.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's not. And it all comes down to the concept of resonance.
Okay.
So those electrons from the double bonds are actually delocalized. Delocalized.
Which means they're shared across the entire ring.
Oh.
It's like they're in a constant dance.
They're all over the place.
So each bond ends up being kind of a hybrid between a single and a double bond.
So not quite single, not quite double up. A hybrid bond. Huh. That is cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always heard that aromatic compounds often have really strong smells.
A lot of them do, yeah.
Is there a connection there?
Yeah, there is. Many of them have distinct aromas, and you find them a lot in fragrances and flavors.
Oh, okay.
Think about vanilla or cinnamon.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Aromatic compounds.
Gotcha. So those are like the foundation
of
our hydrocarbons. But the chapter goes on to talk about functional groups.
Right.
And it describes them as kind of being like accessories for the molecules.
Giving them their own unique personalities and functions.
I love that analogy. Tell me more.
Yeah. So functional groups are these specific groups of atoms that attach to the hydrocarbon backbones.
And they really dictate how that molecule will behave in chemical reactions.
Okay.
They determine the molecule's chemical personality, if you will.
I love that. So it's like... you know, adding a splash of color to an outfit.
Exactly.
Or a cool hat. You know, the accessories really give you a whole new vibe.
That's a great way to think about it. And the chapter gives some really great examples.
Okay, let's hear them.
Well, we have things like alkyl halides, which have a halogen attached.
Like chlorine or bromine?
Yeah, chlorine, bromine, exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, these are found in refrigerants, anesthetics, things like that.
Oh, wow.
And then there are alcohols.
Okay.
Which contain a hydroxyl group.
Hydroxyl group, okay.
And, you know, this is what's in ethanol.
Right. In alcoholic beverages.
Exactly. And in hormones.
Wow. So alcohols are pretty versatile.
Very versatile.
What other cool functional groups are there?
Let's see. We've got ethers.
Ethers. Okay.
Which have an oxygen atom linking two carbon groups.
Okay.
You probably recognize diethyl ether, which was historically used as an anesthetic.
Right, right.
And another example is eugenol, which is a major component of clove oil.
So that's what gives it that distinctive aroma.
Exactly.
It's all about the functional groups.
It is.
What else is on the list?
Well, alenines are another really important one.
Okay.
They have a nitrogen atom.
Hmm.
And they're crucial in a lot of biological processes.
Okay.
You know, your neurotransmitters like dopamine, alanines, and also in stimulants like amphetamine and even nicotine.
Wow, they're powerful.
They are.
Are there any that are responsible for delicious smells, like those aromatic compounds we talked about?
Well, aldehydes and ketones are all about aromas and flavors.
Great.
They both contain a carbonyl group.
Carbonyl.
Which is a carbon double bonded to an oxygen.
Got it.
And believe it or not, retinol.
retinol.
The molecule that helps us see
no way.
Is actually an aldehyde.
So we're literally seeing the world through aldehydes.
In a way, yeah.
That's incredible.
It is.
Any other, I don't know what to call them, like rock star functional groups that we should know about?
Well, let's see. We've got carboxylic acids, esters, and amides.
Okay.
Carboxylic acids are things like acetic acid in vinegar.
Oh, okay.
Gives it that sour taste.
Yeah.
Esters are responsible for the pleasant sense of lots of fruits and flowers.
Mm-hmm.
They're also found in fats.
Oh, okay.
And then amides are the building blocks of proteins.
Wow.
And they're even found in synthetic materials like nylon.
Really? Okay, so they're all over the place.
They are.
It's amazing how these little functional groups, you know, they can have such a huge impact on a molecule's properties and functions.
Right.
It's like they're, molecular chefs or something, adding just the right ingredients to create something totally new.
That's a great analogy.
And that brings us to another really important concept that the chapter talks about. Intermolecular forces.
Yeah.
These are the forces that exist between molecules.
Between molecules.
And they play a huge role in determining the physical properties of substances.
Things like, why are some liquids thicker than others?
Yeah. Why do oil and water separate? I've never really thought about that.
Exactly.
Like there's some invisible stickiness between molecules that we just don't see.
You got it. And the strength of that stickiness depends on what type of intermolecular forces are at play.
So there are different levels of stickiness.
Absolutely.
Okay, tell me more.
So the strongest type are called ionine forces.
Ionine.
And those happen between ions.
Yeah.
So remember sodium acetate from earlier?
Yeah.
Its super high melting point is because of the strong ionic bonds.
It's that stickiness.
Exactly.
You got to really heat it up to break it apart.
Yeah. Now, between molecules that aren't ionic,
we've
got dipole forces, which happen between polar molecules.
Polar molecules, yeah.
So molecules that have a slightly positive end and a slightly negative end.
Like tiny magnets.
Exactly. And those opposite charges attract each other, so the molecules stick together.
Mm.
And then there's a special extra strong dipole force called a hydrogen bond.
Hydrogen bonds, yeah, I've heard of those.
Right. Super important things like water.
Yeah, and DNA, right.
Exactly.
Okay.
So hydrogen bonds are responsible for water's unique properties.
Hmm.
The double helix structure of DNA and even the higher boiling point of ethanol compared to dimethyl ether.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then there's a weakest type of intermolecular force, which is the dispersion forces.
Weakest, but still important, I'm guessing.
Oh, absolutely. Because even nonpolar molecules.
Right. The ones that don't have those positive and negative ends.
Exactly. Can still stick together thanks to these temporary kind of fleeting dipoles that can pop up.
Mm, yeah.
So these dispersion forces are weaker, but they explain why substances like Teflon exist.
Okay.
And even why geckos can climb walls.
Wait, what? Geckos climbing walls. I got to hear more about that.
It's all about the intermolecular forces.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll come back to the geckos.
Okay.
But first, you know, I have a question. If these functional groups and these intermolecular forces, if they're invisible,
yeah,
how do scientists actually know they exist?
Well, they've got their ways.
They're like molecular detectives.
Exactly. And one of their most powerful tools is a technique called infrared spectroscopy, or IR spectroscopy.
IR spectroscopy. Okay.
It's like giving those molecules a fingerprint scan.
Okay. Fingerprint scan for molecules. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
So it involves shining infrared light on a sample and seeing which wavelengths get absorbed.
Hmm.
Different bonds and functional groups vibrate at specific frequencies.
Okay.
And those vibrations show up as peaks in a spectrum.
Interesting.
So each molecule ends up having this unique fingerprint.
So it's like every molecule has its own signature dance move.
Exactly.
Love it. So yeah. For example,
the CH bonds in anions and alkenes that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
They absorb at slightly different frequencies because of the differences in the bond strength due to the hybridization of that carbon atom.
Okay, so even those tiny variations in bond strength can be detected.
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What other kind of fingerprint patterns can this IR spectroscopy reveal?
Well, carbonyl groups, which are in things like aldehydes and ketones that we talked about, they have a strong characteristic peak in a specific range.
Okay.
And OH groups, like in alcohols, tend to have broad peaks because of those hydrogen bonds.
So it's like a cheat sheet to figure out what functional groups are hiding in there.
Exactly.
Like X-ray vision for the molecular world.
Yeah, it's an essential tool for those molecular detectives.
I love it. And, you know, the chapter actually uses this this IR spectroscopy to explore a real-world example.
Right.
Vancomycin. which is a powerful antibiotic.
It is.
A last resort, right? For serious infections.
Yeah, because it's so effective, but also because of resistance issues.
Right, okay.
And, you know, its effectiveness comes down to its molecular structure.
Okay.
Vancomycin uses hydrogen bonds to attach to bacteria.
Interesting.
And it prevents them from building their cell walls.
So it's like vancomycin is a molecular warrior using its sticky hydrogen bonds to fight off the bacteria.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this is where things get a little concerning. Antibiotic resistance.
Right.
Some bacteria have actually evolved to evade vancomycin.
Oh, no.
By changing a single atom.
Wait, just one atom? That's all it takes?
Sometimes, yeah.
Wow.
That tiny change is enough to disrupt the hydrogen bonds, making vancomycin much less effective.
It's a constant battle.
It is a constant arms race.
Wow, this is all incredibly complex, but also fascinating.
It is.
I had no idea there was so much going on at the molecular level.
Right.
And how those tiny changes can have such huge consequences.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that even though we can't see them, molecules are constantly interacting and reacting, shaping the world around us.
In ways that we're just beginning to understand.
Yeah.
So we've explored hydrocarbons, gotten up close and personal with functional groups.
Yeah.
We even learned how scientists use IR spectroscopy to identify those molecular players.
Right.
Where do we go from here?
Well, now that we've got a good grasp of the basic building blocks,
okay,
let's dive a little deeper into the properties of these organic compounds, specifically those physical properties that you can observe and measure.
So things like melting points and boiling points.
Melting points, boiling points, exactly.
And solubility.
Solubility, yep.
Now, those are all determined by those intermolecular forces we were just discussing, right? The stronger the forces, the harder it is to separate the molecules.
Yep.
So that means higher melting and boiling points.
Exactly.
And solubility is all about whether the forces between the solute and the solvent are strong enough to overcome the forces holding the solute together.
It is.
So like dissolve, like
right.
Polar solutes dissolving in polar solvents.
Yep.
Non-polar now in non-polar. Well, it all comes back to those intermolecular attractions.
It does.
And the chapter gives some really interesting examples of how these concepts play out in real life.
It does.
Remember the section on ionic compounds?
Yeah.
How their high melting points are due to those super strong ion forces.
Yeah, they're tough to break.
Yeah. Sodium acetate, it melts at 324 degrees Celsius.
That's hot.
That's really hot. Those ionic bonds are not messing around.
They're not.
And then there's that discussion about hydrogen bonding and how it explains why water has such a high boiling point.
Right, compared to other molecules that are about the same size.
Right, exactly. Those hydrogen bonds are like molecular glue.
They are.
Holding those water molecules together really tightly.
Yep.
And it's not just water. Hydrogen bonding is super important in all sorts of biological systems.
Absolutely.
Like the structure of DNA.
Right.
How proteins fold.
Yep.
It's essential.
It is.
Did you find the section on hydrophobic and hydrophilic interactions interesting?
I did.
I thought it was fascinating how some molecules, you know, like those with long hydrocarbon chains,
yeah,
they just don't want to mix with water.
Right. It's like oil and water.
They just can't get along.
They can't.
And this hydrophobic effect is so important, especially in biology.
Hugely.
The formation of cell membranes.
Yeah.
How proteins fold.
Yeah, it's all about those intermolecular forces.
Right.
And how they drive the organization of molecules in these watery environments.
So even though we can't see these forces at work,
yeah,
they're constantly shaping the world around us.
All the time.
From the properties of everyday substances to the complex machinery of life itself.
It's amazing.
It really is. It's mind-blowing. And the chapter even highlights how important these intermolecular forces are in materials science.
Right.
Like the development of self-assembling molecules that actually mimic bone growth.
It's incredible what they're doing with that.
It's really inspiring. Mm-hmm. Makes you wonder what other breakthroughs are just around the corner.
Right.
What other kind of molecular magic can we expect in the future?
Oh, so much potential there.
Yeah.
You know, imagine materials that can repair themselves.
Like a self-healing phone screen.
Exactly.
That would be amazing.
Or fabrics that change color based on the temperature.
Oh, wow.
Or even nanomachines that can deliver drugs directly to diseased cells.
That sounds like something straight out of science fiction.
I know, but it's all based on these principles of organic chemistry that we've been talking about.
Right.
By understanding the structure and properties of molecules and learning to manipulate them,
yeah,
we can create materials and technologies that were once impossible.
So what you're saying is, the future is molecular.
The future is molecular.
I love it. Well, this deep dive has definitely given me a whole new appreciation for the power and complexity of organic chemistry.
Me too.
I'm starting to see the world in a whole new light.
Right.
It's like this world where invisible forces are constantly at play,
yeah,
shaping everything we see and touch.
It's true.
It's incredible. I'm excited to see what else we uncover.
Yeah.
As we continue our deep dive into the world of organic chemistry.
Hey, you know, the chapter goes on to explore some really cool techniques that chemists use to determine the actual shapes of molecules.
Oh, yeah.
It's like molecular origami.
Molecular origami. I love that. The chapter mentions something called VSFPR theory.
VSFPR, yep.
Which is the idea that those electron pairs, they want to be as far apart from each other as possible.
Right.
So they kind of end up influencing the overall shape of the molecule.
Exactly.
It's amazing to me how those tiny little electrons can have such a big impact on the 3D structure.
Well, it's all about the electrostatic interactions, right?
Right.
And understanding those shapes is key for predicting how those molecules will interact with each other.
Okay.
Remember, you know, dipole forces that we talked about before.
Yeah.
Well, the shape of a molecule plays a huge role in whether it'll be polar or nonpolar.
Oh, right. Like carbon tetrachloride.
Carbon tetrachloride.
It has those polar carbon chlorine bonds. But the molecule itself is nonpolar.
Nonpolar because
of its symmetrical shape.
Tetrahedral shape.
Right. It's like those bond dipoles cancel each other out.
Exactly. It's perfectly choreographed.
A molecular dance.
I love it. And remember how we were talking about cis and trans isomers?
Yeah.
Those different arrangements around a double bond can also drastically affect a molecule's polarity.
Right.
And therefore its properties.
Like cis-1,2-dichloroethene, where the chlorine atoms are on the same side of the double bond.
Yeah.
It has a dipole moment.
Right.
But trans-1-margyl-2-dichloroethene, where those chlorines are on opposite sides,
yep,
canceling each other out.
Right.
No dipole moment.
Exactly.
It's fascinating how just flipping those groups around that double bond can make such a difference.
It really is. It all comes back to that molecular architecture.
Yeah.
And those fundamental principles that we've been talking about, the bonding and electronegativity.
It's like a chain reaction of knowledge, you know?
It is.
Each concept builds upon the last.
Yeah.
Creating this more complete picture of the molecular world.
Precisely. And as we delve deeper, we'll see these principles applied to more complex molecules and reactions.
Yeah.
But even at this fundamental level,
right,
it's remarkable how much information we can get just by knowing a molecule's structure and the types of bonds it contains.
I'm telling you, this deep dive has given me a whole new appreciation for the beauty and complexity of organic chemistry.
It's pretty amazing.
It's like a hidden world.
It is just waiting to be explored.
And speaking of possibilities,
yeah,
the chapter ends on this thought-provoking case study,
right,
about vancomycin and antibiotic resistance.
Yeah, such an important topic.
It really highlights the importance of understanding that molecular structure.
A structure is key.
In the context of, you know, medicine.
Excellent.
And global health.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that one single atom change can render a life-saving drug ineffective.
Yeah.
It really underscores the challenges that we face with combating infectious diseases.
It's a constant battle. We're always trying to stay one step ahead.
It's an arms race.
Yeah.
For sure. And one that requires us to really understand this molecular battlefield.
Well, I gotta say, this deep dive has really been an eye-opener.
Glad to hear it.
I feel like I've gained this whole new perspective on the invisible world of molecules and the forces that govern their interactions.
That's what we're here for.
So we've covered a lot.
We have.
Hydrocarbons, functional groups, intermolecular forces.
We've even touched on those molecular fingerprints.
Yeah, the IR spectroscopy.
Yep.
But before we wrap things up,
yeah,
what are some of the key takeaways from this chapter that you think listeners should really try to remember?
That's a good question. There are definitely a few essential points that stand out.
Okay.
First and foremost, the structure of a molecule really dictates its properties.
Right.
The types of atoms, how they're arranged, and the bonds that connect them. All these things contribute to its unique identity and how it interacts with the world.
It's like the molecular version of you are what you eat.
Right.
You are what you're made of.
Exactly.
And a big part of understanding the structure is recognizing those functional groups.
Absolutely.
Learning to identify them, understand their properties.
Yeah.
That's essential for navigating the world of organic chemistry.
It is.
It's like you got to learn the language of molecules.
Exactly.
You got to know the lingo.
If you know the language,
yeah,
you can understand the conversation.
Exactly. And then you can predict how the molecules are going to behave.
Yep.
Maybe even design new ones with specific properties.
Exactly.
That would be incredible.
It is.
And we can't forget about those intermolecular forces.
Right.
They're the reason why substances exist in different states of matter.
Yeah.
How they interact with each other.
Yep.
Why certain things have higher boiling points than others.
Right.
Or why some things dissolve and others don't.
Exactly.
It's like these invisible forces are calling the shots at the molecular level.
They are.
And as we saw with the vancomycin example,
yeah,
you know, even tiny changes in that molecular structure can have huge consequences.
They can.
So we need to understand these principles, not just for academic reasons,
right,
but for tackling those real-world problems in medicine, material science, and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely.
This deep dive has really opened my eyes to the power and the elegance of organic chemistry.
It's a beautiful subject.
It's amazing how something so small can have such a huge impact.
It really is. And you know, the more we learn about this field,
yeah,
the more we realize there's still so much to discover.
Makes you wonder what other mysteries are hidden within those molecules.
Oh, tons. Tons of mysteries.
Just waiting to be unraveled.
And speaking of unraveling mysteries,
okay,
there's one more fascinating area that the chapter explores, yeah, the concept of chirality.
Chirality.
Chirality. It's all about handedness.
Handedness.
Yeah. Think of your left and right hands.
Okay.
They're mirror images of each other.
Yeah.
But you can't superimpose them, you know?
Right, man.
You can't perfectly overlap them. So some molecules have this handedness as well.
So molecules can be left-handed or right-handed.
Exactly. A chiral molecule is one that has a non-superimposable mirror image.
Okay, so they're like molecular twins, but with a twist.
I love that. That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
And here's the thing.
Yeah.
These chiral twins, even though they have the same atoms and bonds,
mm-hmm,
they can have very different properties.
Wait, really? How is that possible if they're made of the same stuff?
Well, it all comes down to how they interact with other chiral molecules.
Okay.
You know, think about how your left hand fits perfectly into a left-handed glove.
Right.
But not a right-handed glove.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So it's like chiral molecules are picky dancers.
They only want to partner up with certain molecules.
Yeah. They got the right-handedness.
Okay, I like that analogy.
And this concept of chirality is so important in biology and medicine.
Okay.
For example, a lot of drugs are chiral molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And often, only one of the enantiomers, which is what we call those chiral twins, only one of them is actually the active form.
So it's like one twin is the superhero and the other one is just kind of along for the ride.
You could say that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the other enantiomer can even have harmful effects.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
It is. It highlights how even subtle differences in the structure,
yeah,
can have this huge impact on a molecule's properties and how it interacts with the world.
So how do chemists actually distinguish between these chiral twins?
Well, they use a technique called polarimetry.
Polarimetry, correct. Yeah.
It involves shining polarized light through a solution of the chiral molecule.
Hmm.
And that chiral molecule will rotate the plane of polarized light,
oh,
either to the left or to the right, depending on its handedness.
So it's like it puts a spin on the light.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And by measuring the angle of that rotation,
okay,
chemists can figure out the enantiomeric excess of the sample.
Which basically means like the percentage of one enantiomer versus the other one.
Exactly.
So they can figure out which twin is dominant.
Exactly.
It's like a molecular census.
I like that. And this technique is super important in the pharmaceutical industry,
right,
to make sure that drugs are manufactured with the correct enantiomer.
It's really amazing how these tools allow us to peek into that molecular world.
It is.
And understand those really subtle but crucial differences in the structure.
It's key for, you know, developing new drugs,
yeah,
designing new materials, and really gaining a deeper appreciation for the complexity,
yeah,
and beauty of this molecular world.
Well, this deep dive has taken me on a whirlwind tour of organic chemistry.
It's a lot to take in.
It is, from hydrocarbons to functional groups, intermolecular forces, chirality,
wow,
and these amazing techniques like IR spectroscopy and polarimetry.
Right.
It's been a crash course in all things molecular.
And we've only scratched the surface.
Right.
There's so much more to explore, but these fundamental concepts that we talked about,
yeah,
they really provide a good foundation,
yeah,
for understanding this incredible diversity and complexity of molecules.
It's like we've been given a key to unlock this whole new world.
Right.
This world where invisible forces shape our reality.
Yeah.
And where these tiny differences in structure can have such profound consequences.
It's an amazing world down there.
It really is. And I can't wait to see what the future holds.
We either.
But for now, I think we've given our listeners a lot to think about.
We have.
You know, it's wild to think about all this. You know, hydrocarbons and functional groups and those intermolecular forces.
Even chirality.
Chirality, yeah. All happening at a level that we can't even see.
It's a whole invisible world.
It's a secret world of molecules doing their thing.
Interacting, reacting.
And we're only just beginning to understand.
Just starting to scratch the surface.
But you know what? It's a game with really high stakes.
It is.
Like that vancomycin example.
Right. One little change.
One atom.
Life or death.
It yeah. really emphasizes why understanding this stuff is so important.
It really does. It drives home that point that, you know, structure is destiny.
Yeah.
At the molecular level, for sure.
If we can crack the code, if we can read that language of molecules,
the lingo,
then we can predict how they're going to behave.
Right.
And we can even design new ones with specific properties.
Exactly.
It's like having a molecular toolbox.
A whole toolbox of possibilities.
Oh, so many possibilities.
Designing new drugs to fight diseases, new materials.
Right. The chapter even mentions those self-assembling molecules.
Mimicking bone growth.
That could revolutionize medicine.
It could.
What else can we expect in the future? What other kind of, I don't know, molecular magic is out there?
Well, imagine materials that can repair themselves.
Self-healing phone screens.
Exactly. You drop your phone.
Yeah.
No more cracks.
That would be amazing. What else?
Fabrics that change color.
Ooh.
Based on temperature.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Or how about nanomachines that can deliver drugs directly to diseased cells?
See, that's the stuff that sounds like science fiction.
I know, but it's all grounded in the principles we've been talking about.
Right. It's all about
understanding the structure,
manipulating those molecules,
yep,
creating things that we never thought possible.
It's an incredible future.
So you're saying the future really is molecular?
The future is molecular.
I am so here for that. This deep dive has really, I don't know, it's opened my eyes.
I'm glad.
I have a whole new perspective now.
That's great to hear.
Now when I see, you know, a plastic bottle or a piece of fruit, I'm thinking about all the molecules that make it up.
All those tiny building blocks.
And those invisible forces holding it all together.
It's a whole new way of seeing the world.
It is.
Yeah.
So next time you're sipping your coffee or walking in the park.
Yeah.
Take a moment to appreciate that molecular dance happening all around you.
Because who knows what groundbreaking discoveries are out there waiting to be made.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of organic chemistry.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time. Keep exploring and stay curious.